This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello and welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your hosts, Lucy Halden.
And Benjamin Halden.
Today we've got some very exciting news. It's very exciting, isn't it, obviously? I'm assuming you also put this on your show notes.
I did.
Okay, so after three. One, two, three. Are you supposed to say at the same time?
Oh, sorry.
One, two, three. We got kittens.
Oh, okay, I was going to say kittens.
God. Well, yeah, we got kittens. They are the cutest thing. We'll post a little video over the top on Spotify and YouTube so you guys can see what our gorgeous new children, baby, wonderful little fluffballs look like.
Yeah, because the chance of them coming out to even be on the set will be a date in the future.
Yeah. So we've had them for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 4 days now, and already they're so much more confident. The first day is nil confidence, like under the sofa. Didn't come out once, really, did they? And we don't want to, like, completely scare the shit out of them. And then the second day, you know when you have, like, gaps in your house? Ben thought they slithered under the door, like a little slug or something. Like, he literally thought they went under the gap in the door.
Yeah, so we were both out, came back after an hour, and they're just gone. I had no idea where they'd gone.
No sofa.
I'm ringing Lucy upstairs, looking under the beds, looking under wardrobes, heard the dog barking outside. I was like,
they've been eaten.
Have they gone outside the house? Everything was going through my head, like, where? I was like, they've gone already. We've had them one day and that's it.
I wasn't in, by the way, so I'm getting all these missed calls. And I got a text being like, they've gone. All he said was, they've gone. And I was training, so I couldn't reply. And I thought, well, they're not gone. 2 minutes later, they're behind the washing machine. Actually, probably about half an hour later, they're behind the washing machine. But it wasn't behind them. They'd like wedged themselves. They're absolutely tiny. They'd wedged themselves in this tiny gap. You know, like a fake cupboard. So it had a front, but it didn't have a side. And we didn't know that at all. So we had to kind of, maneuver the whole situation.
I had to Google where the kittens go.
Behind washing machines.
And then someone said, it could be behind the washing machine. Yeah. So like, pull the washing machine out. There we go. Two little balls of fluff behind there.
Yeah, but they are much better. They are, considering we're only on, is it day four?
Yeah.
What's that? Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. But day four, that's good. They're actually very bold. So we will show you on the podcast, so make sure you're looking on Spotify or YouTube while you're there. Also subscribe. They are called Minnie and Munch because they're munchkin kittens. Mm-hmm. And we thought we'd be unique.
I do apologise if today I sound a little bit
nasally.
It's because I am
nasally for a while now.
Well, we obviously got, is the first episode we've done back from the honeymoon or not?
No,
we've done another one, but pretty much as soon as we got back, it's either as soon as I go away and get on holiday I get ill, but this time it's been as soon as I got back, because when I relax and chill a little bit, my central nervous system or immune system drops, and then I'm just open to everything, so I got ill straight away, and it takes me forever to get over it.
Your immune system isn't great though, is it?
Since I've meningitis, it's been shit, yeah.
I think I also jinxed you as well. Like, we got back from the holiday and Ben usually gets like sniffly on a holiday. Like Lanzarote this year, he was a little bit ill. Last year in America, he got it. Like, whenever we go abroad for like a relaxing holiday, he gets ill, and he didn't this time round. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. You haven't got ill. We land back in the UK and he's like, like ill. I was like, oh my God, I've jinxed you. But you're doing a little bit better, but
it's more so just annoying with training, because I've got a Hyrox event in 3 weeks and I've barely been able to train with it at the moment.
You'll be fine. Have you told the people what you're doing in Hyrox?
Hyrox Malaga.
Yeah. And can you say about the next one?
No. I don't know, yeah. I don't think so. Yeah.
No. But it's very exciting. You've been training really hard for it.
I was. To be fair, training on holiday was really good. I know some people don't like training on holiday, but it's my favourite time to train, because... Often when I train, I'll go on my phone or I'm thinking about work, or I'll pick up an email or something's going on, or I'm filming. Whereas when I go on holiday, I've got loads more time. I'm not thinking about finishing training and getting to work. I'm not doing any emails because I'm on holiday. And it's a good time where I can just focus on training, and it's in the heat and the sun, so it's in great conditions. And when you're running, you're in a different place, so it always feels better, goes quicker, niggles, injuries, warm-up feels easier. So, yeah, I really enjoy training on holiday, which is why we always book somewhere, which either has a place where we can run or a place where we can lift.
I think what it is, when people looking in from the outside perspective, they're like, oh, take a break, like have a rest. And I'm thinking, but we don't hate training. We love training. We love running. We love being outdoors. We love the gym. So why would you stop doing it when you're going somewhere that you also love? Like doing them both together. If you hate training and you're forcing yourself to train, I'd probably assess your goals and get new goals. But we don't hate training. Like I had a few comments from out there being like, oh my God, you're doing so much. And I'm thinking, but what a wonderful thing to be able to just like run around in Florida in the heat or train in a gym. And as Ben said, we're not stressed about filming content. We're training together. It's really, really nice for us. And I think sometimes it comes from a place of that own person's individual insecurity. If they say to someone else like, oh, like you're obsessed, like you're training on holiday. It's not that. It's if you enjoy it, absolutely carry on. I mean, bear in mind, we also did have stuff to train for. But we love it and it makes us feel happy.
Yeah, well, number one, if you've got something to train for, then it's a non-negotiable, isn't it? Because you've got something coming up that is a priority. But number two, the simple thing to ask yourself is, does something make you feel worse off or better off? And if something is making you feel better, then obviously include it and continue to do it wherever you are in the world.
Yeah.
Today's episode on that is all about things and life hacks to happier and healthier living.
Five things.
And me and Lucy I've kind of come up with a couple of things ourselves that we're gonna tune into over the podcast, and then we can go back and forth on the points that each of us brings up.
Yeah, I like that logistics of what you've done there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
the first one that I've brought up, and I've not dug too much into this, it was more so, I know we've spoke about this topic quite a few times, but I think it is so important. And number one's going to be phone usage. Again, this came to light because when we were on holiday, and there's a new study out, which I'm going to pull up. I saved it. Where are we? And it's to do with, again, phone usage and mental health, and also, unfortunately, suicide. And it's called The Terrible Costs of a Phone-Based Childhood. And it was by an article by Jonathan Haidt. And he's wrote, for a little over a decade, we have been raising children in an environment that is hostile to human development. We need to change that now. And he goes on to talk about how from the early 2010s, the rate of depression and anxiety, this is specific to the United States, was fairly stable up until the 21st century, but then has rose by more than 50% in many studies between 2010 and 2019. Suicide rate rose by 48% in adolescents between the ages 10 to 19. For girls ages 10 to 14, it rose 131%. And obviously he's using correlation here. I think it's probably impossible to use causation as a title for this. But he goes on a lot to talk about the Generation Z, people born after 1996 and some of the problems occurred there. So you can go in and read this article. I think it was published in The Atlantic. But there's a big graph which kind of shows the self-harm rates of children between the age 10 and 14, of boys and girls, and the emergence of phone usage. The most recent data coming from Gallup, which shows that American teens spend 5 hours a day on social media platforms, including TikTok and YouTube, adding other phone usage, that's even higher for numbers across all ages. It's really interesting when you look into the study and how the self-reported anxiety and depression rates have increased since 2010, how the phone usage has obviously massively increased with that as well. So that's why I wanted to talk about this today, kind of spark that as well as being on holiday. And I think we were a lot better on holiday this time with phone usage. We were
really accountable to each other.
And there's going to be a couple of tips that I include in this segment, because there are things that you won't even think about that you can do whether you're on holiday or whether you're at home. Because I think very rarely I go on my phone and come off it and feel better.
Yeah. Well, Yeah, from social media, I don't. If I'm messaging friends and stuff, I usually feel quite nice. Like, I love speaking to my friends. But if I've come on social media, I'm just like, fucking ass, I want to lock it, put it down, turn it around. And also, do you know what's really interesting? You don't tend, like, you know when you're scrolling through social media, there's maybe, and you're scrolling for a really long time, there's probably one thing you remember. There'll be like, what, maybe one or no post you remember. Not always a negative. There's some things that I take away and I'm like, oh, that was really interesting. But there, in my brain, there'd probably be a lot more negative that I saw on there rather than positive. But then again, it depends who
human
you follow.
Human nature.
It also depends who you follow. Like, I've made a very conscious effort to mute or unfollow anyone who makes you feel a certain type of way. And then some people might be really offended that they're muted and they don't even know they're muted. But if I can't absorb that content, and I would love so many people to mute people or unfollow people who don't make you feel good. I think that's one of the first steps in terms of how social media can bring opportunities and be a positive for you rather than a negative. The person doesn't care. I don't care if loads of people like unfollowed me or blocked me or muted me because they can't absorb what I'm doing. That is absolutely fine. People shouldn't be offended by that. I think it's really weird if people do get offended by that on social media because they're doing it for themselves.
I think Instagram made that hard though by showing content, not just from people you follow, but yeah, from lots of other people. I know there's different ways that you can toggle that, but it definitely made it more difficult.
I don't even know if you can toggle it. I think that the whole
like
new
TikTok,
algorithm.
You, where you can go on following or
if you favorite it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no one does that anymore, I don't think.
No, not favorite.
Yeah, it's got that feature where it says following or like favorites
on what
people on Instagram.
I'm talking about TikTok. It's not favorite. It's called something else.
Yeah. Oh, for you page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it stood out to me because we made the conscious effort not to do it, and we actually called each other out when we were doing it. And I think there's two different things that can come into play here, whether you've got a partner or a friend, and this can relate to anything. I said this to you when we're on holiday, is that you can either be nice or you can be kind to someone. The example I gave of this is, for me personally, I've said this before, I would want you to tell me if I'd got fat or out of shape. You could be nice to me and say, oh, you look great. It would be kind for you to say, Ben, you've got fat.
I wouldn't.
Because you're being kind because you're looking out for my future and my health. And there's two different ways that you can then, I suppose, mentally map that out, nice or kind. And I think it's the same with this, where we would call each other out with phone usage on holiday, and it was being kind because we were trying to better our own futures and better our experience on a honeymoon by not being on our phones. I think we were really good at it. There was one day I was shit at it because I think I had a post I needed to put up.
So you
when we were away.
You didn't need to put it up, but you really wanted to put it up, and then you got more annoyed that the post didn't
go
up. No,
it was a partnership post, so I had to put it up.
Oh.
So I needed to put it up, and the whole thing crashed. The whole post went, and I just fucking got in a big frenzy and started whacking my phone on the table and got pissed off and all the niceties of life. And that just like spoiled my day, not spoiled my holiday, but spoiled my afternoon just because that one thing happened. That's a kind of example of something that I didn't want to happen on honeymoon. And again, how doing one thing or using something made me worse off rather than better off. And there's four kind of things that I've noted down here that whether you're on holiday, whether you're away, or whether you just want to limit your phone usage that you can do. So number one, leave your phone on charge in a different room when you go to sleep. Super simple. Number two is only use social media when you're on Wi-Fi, which means straight away you have to limit yourself because you don't always have Wi-Fi, so that's a good rule. Number three is place a wager with a friend. So if you're both trying to bring down your screen time, if you go over that set time for the week, you have to pay the other person £20. So it's a net negative because you've got a negative consequence to that action. And the fourth thing is turn notifications off apps that you know you're regularly using. We did this when we went away for all emails, for all work-related apps. And it just means that you're not constantly like a meerkat looking at something flashing up all the time, because when you get notifications, it's very easy to pull you back into something, which is what notifications are used for in the first place. Just four things, four easy tips that you can use to lower your phone usage and hopefully leave you more present.
Yeah, the notification one's really interesting, actually. I've always had my notifications turned off on all social media platforms.
Emails.
Emails, not when I'm home, but yeah, when I'm away. But in general, I don't think you should have your social media notifications on. Like, you don't need to be notified when someone likes a fucking post. Do you know?
It's easy to say it, but some people like a quick dopamine hit. and not everyone's getting thousands of likes on a photo. So for some people, it's not as trivial.
But I still don't think you need to see that notification. You can see that notification when you go onto Instagram, whatever. Even like years and years and years ago when I just had Instagram, it wasn't a job. I've never had notifications on social media because I didn't. I mean, I'm not, I always have my phone on Do Not Disturb. I don't know if that's another good thing to do. It pisses Ben off sometimes because he's called me like 10 times. And I'm like, sorry, my phone's on Do Not Disturb. And it's right next to me. I just can't hear it. And I just love having it on Do Not Disturb. I'm like, no, don't disturb me. Like, I'm either working or I'm doing something. If I want to be on my phone, I will get back to you. If it's on Do Not Disturb, you probably won't hear from me for hours. And I think that's quite nice. It's not like you're ignoring people. It's just the phone's not going off. It's buzzing. It's turned around. You don't even know if you've been... It's just...
I tend to notice that friends will leave their notifications on social media platforms, whereas people who use it as, like, I guess people of influence or influence or for a work basis tend to turn it off because they're being peppered with stuff all the time. But I'm quite bad with emails. So even that's why I need to turn it off when I was away, because I'll still go on some emails and sneak on some emails and just check what's going on my inbox. That's kind of my bad habit.
Yeah. Emails, I'm not as bad, but definitely I'm a do not disturb kind of gal.
I think the Wi-Fi only one was one that I also discovered on holiday because my data ran out.
What about if you work from home though? I don't know if that's very, like, people who work from home have constant access to Wi-Fi. I think airplane mode is more beneficial. But
people have got to leave the house at some point. The thing is, we all know the things that we should be doing in life, but unless there is rules or accountability there to pull them into place, it won't happen. So by setting these small rules for yourself, it doesn't have to be black or white, I'm now going to stop using social media. A rule of I will only use social media when I've got Wi-Fi is putting something in place for you to then keep accountable. So whether that's you're still using your social media for a lot of the day, but now you're using it for I don't know, 4 hours instead of 5 hours because you've got to go out for an hour and then you no longer get to use it because there's no Wi-Fi, is a step in the right direction. It's not 0 to 100 because for most people that doesn't work. Exactly the same with weight loss. So I think that's an easy thing that you can do. And when we were away in America, I was then most of the time only using my phone when I had Wi-Fi.
I get that completely. I was just thinking, oh my God, we work from home so much of the time, so we always have access to Wi-Fi. One of the apps that I used to have, and I don't use it anymore, but I might get it back because it was really good. I had it when I was at uni and I used to get really distracted with my phone, just going on it and scrolling and things like that when I was trying to revise or do my like coursework or dissertation. And I can't remember what the app's called, but you're planting a tree and you set like a timer on your phone. So like you can't go on it for an hour. And if you go on it, you're then not planting the tree. And it's almost like a charity thing, but you're planting a tree in a country. Do you know one of those where, but if you go on your phone and you unlock it, your tree stops growing. So it's like you've got this progress. So you want to build this tree and help these people. And it was so incredible. And if you went on your phone, say within that hour, you'd lose all your points for the day.
Yeah.
And it was really, really smart and really clever.
I think it's called Forest, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
That, Kyle, it was really, really good. So that's a really good app. I've not used it in ages, but I used it throughout uni and it just helped me when I wasn't distracted.
Yeah. There's not something as simple. It's pretty similar, but I know there's other people who have used a similar thing, but in a negative way. So people will say, for example, like I said, with your friend, you have to pay them £20 if you go over what your usage is supposed to be for the week. Some people would have something similar to that, but what they would have to do if they broke whatever the said rule was, they would have to give a set amount of money each month that they broke that rule to either a charity or some kind of...
That was on the Stephen podcast, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah.
Subscription, yeah. That didn't like. I've seen it way before the Stephen podcast though. So for example, if you didn't hit the usage or you went over the usage, you would have to give 50 quid to the Andrew Tate war room thing. You know, something like that. Something that you really don't agree with.
Ew. And
imagine how much that would piss you off, giving money towards something or someone that you don't like.
I'm going to kindly interrupt today's episode because it is sponsored by Graham's, the family dairy company. And We spoke about how hard it is in this day and age to have easy access to protein on the go. We have the world's busiest lives. We just do, millennials, Gen Zs. And the fact you can just pick these up from literally any supermarket. You've got Asda, Sainsbury's, Tesco, Spar, Aldi, Lidl, Morrison's. You will have already seen it everywhere and anywhere. So this one, for example, that I was having today, 15 grams of protein. Look at that. You could literally just walk around, have it in 2 seconds, got your protein. 35 grams of protein. That is more than a protein shake. And that's incredible. And it's delicious.
Yeah, I think the thing that I really like about this one is as well, and I'll be carrying these around with me more often, is one, yes, it's 35 grams of protein. But two, it's the consistency of the drink itself. It's a lot thicker than a protein shake. It goes down a lot better. It tastes a lot nicer. And the most important thing, it keeps you a lot fuller. So you're going to snack less. Now, as part of this, Powered by Graham's is doing a 30-day challenge aimed at encouraging you to increase your protein intake post-exercise. Graham's Family Dairy Protein products are fat-free, low-sugar, and sweetener-free, making them the perfect on-the-go snack just to take with you pretty much anywhere. If you'd like to sign up to the free 30-day challenge, make sure that you visit www.grahamsfamilydairy.com/powered. Which will give you access and tell you a lot more about the 30-day challenge.
And all you need to do is add in your email address. So it really is that simple. And honestly, guys, we would not tell you how good they are, and they would not be on this podcast if they weren't absolutely phenomenal. Just to remind you guys again, that URL is www.grahamsfamilydairy.com/powered.
Yeah.
Back to today's episode.
Yeah. There was a similar example. It wasn't regarding the phone, with a couple, and the woman really wanted to get motivated for the gym, or running it was something like that, like run 5 miles a day or whatever it was. And her husband was going to, if she didn't do it, would donate money to whatever the gun license thing is in America. Like,
oh, yeah.
That we've given that example before, and that is a really strong, obviously, and the Andrew Tate one for me, yeah, my God, I don't want to give any cent of anything about me to him. So that would motivate the hell out of me. I think that's really clever. I mean, you'd have to then stay accountable to that friend or partner. Or someone you lived with, I think it would work quite well.
I think it's cool, but human beings, when it comes to behavioralism, respond way better from positive reinforcement. Mm. So setting, like in my diary, it says at the very top left corner what your goal is this week and then what the reward's going to be. So rewarding good behavior works a lot better than punishment will. So I think it's still important that you go, okay, I have stayed under my usage this week or this month, so I'm now going to reward myself with this.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Phones. Done.
Bish, bash, bosh. Shall I go on to one of my points?
Number two.
Well, I actually had it as number three, but we'll go back to yours.
Just call it number two.
Number two. How do you talk to yourself? Now, this one is really, really interesting. And I think if you can nail how you talk to yourself, it will lead to a happier and healthier life. Now, when self-talk is essentially, it's the voice in your head, or when you're training or when you're working and there's this other little person who is telling you things. A lot of the time, the negative voice or the patronizing or the ill voice, the one that's not that pleasant, is so much more powerful than the positive voice is. If you haven't trained your mind. Now, there's obviously loads of things you can do in terms of mental strength and mental clarity and things like that. But one of the first things I noted down is actually recognizing and understanding that you do have, it's that whole angel devil on the shoulder. And we did the podcast with Tia and she actually explained it as the good wolf and the bad wolf. I quite like the notion of angel devil, where you'd have two things sat on your shoulder. And a lot of the time, the devil voice, the negative voice, the patronizing one is so much more powerful than the angel, because a lot of the time the negative voice is telling you to do something easier. It's telling you to give up. It's telling you it's not worth it. It's saying all these things that is an easier way out. Whereas the angel or the good wolf or the positive side of your shoulder is telling you how beneficial it will be, or maybe it's a longer term goal, or if you keep going. But in that moment, when you're talking to yourself, the negative side is so much stronger.
And it's something that you have to come to terms with and understand that you've got both of these sides, and how do we get that positive self-talk to be, I guess, more personalized to you, more magnifying, more, what's the word? Less catastrophic than the other side. Now, a few little things that I basically wrote down that I thought I've used in the past and I thought would be really helpful to you guys, and we'll get Ben to chime in as well. But one of the first things, and this is a really simple, subtle, kind of like a cute little thing to say to yourself. If you're very negative to yourself, you wake up in the morning, you look in the mirror. We always pinpoint the negative. We pull our skin, we pop our spots, we pull our nose to the side, we mess with our hair. We're really negative as human beings. It's like our natural thing. The first thing we do is we see a negative. If you were to look at your friend, you wouldn't look at them and be like, ugly. Like you're so ugly. Like you've got, you did this. Treat yourself how you would treat a friend, and speak to yourself how you speak to a friend. So be gentle and encouraging. You're not going to be an absolute dick to your friend unless you're not a very good friend. Whether you want to support them in any way, whatever they're going through, don't say anything to yourself that you wouldn't advise anyone else. And I think that's one of the most important ones that I want to make note of, because it's something that I made a massive change with quite recently. And then just a second point, and then I'll just let you go into it, is quite hard. And it's something that I think particular people can either do or they can't do, but limiting your exposure to negativity. And this can be really hard because it's to do with your environment and who you're surrounded with. But you can limit the amount of negativity in your life that you're around, whether you go down the route of certain social media platforms that you just can't get on board with anymore, or you download the Forest app, you're reducing your screen time. A lot of the time, though, it's the people you surround yourself with. There will be people who are just negative. And I have had it in my life so many times where people are just fucking negative. And I'm like, I get it. I have negative moments. But there's a difference between someone who just has a darn negative personality and someone who has deep down negative, sad moments. We all go through that. One of the best things you can do, because you're thinking, well, there's loads of people in my life who don't understand fitness or support my goals or anything like that. Go out of your way to find other people. And that could be a run club. It could be like, I go to Hybrid now twice a week so I can see my girls. And I'm surrounded by people who are just incredible. The guys and the girls there, they support my goals. We hype each other up. And I do that for only 2 hours a week. I see them 2 hours a week, and it changes my whole perspective on a lot of things, because I'm surrounded by people who have a growth mindset, who aren't negative all the time. And it could be an hour a week. It could be half an hour a week. It could be going to a local book club, run club, gym class. I don't know, whatever it could be, dance lesson. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just something completely different. You're in a space which is more positive. You're surrounded by different people. It could be a networking group. You could go to like a networking meal or dinner if that was your thing. Whatever it would be, it doesn't matter. It only matters to you. So 1 or 2 hours a week, get yourself in a new environment. Not that it's like fucking like, wow, toxic positivity, but it's just better for your mental state. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things I've got loads more, but like those two were really, just really significant to me.
One thing, it's important to point out, is no one's born negative.
No.
No one's born a negative person. Everyone comes out exactly the same. Mm. It's through like social learning and influence that
the environment,
people become more negative. And this comes down to people's biological and evolutionary tendencies as well, on the flip side of the way that we will think. Because the way that you will talk to yourself, or the way that you respond to things in certain situations, some of those things do come from evolution. The way that like we will defend ourselves or lash out or speak to ourselves sometimes, based on the things that we know are going to increase our chances, I don't know, of survival, or defend our ego, which is really important to us because we want to feel like we're protecting our status. But the most difficult thing, I think, as human beings, is to try and be mindful. It's so difficult. Because if you could be mindful all the time, you would realize when you're speaking to yourself the way that you do not wish to speak to yourself. So mindfulness is such a powerful trait, but it's so difficult to be aware of. Mm-hmm. Because if you're mindful and you start saying to yourself, I'm a fat piece of shit, or I'm never going to succeed at anything, or I'm terrible at this, or I'll never win, or I'll never get that position, or I'm not worthy, then you're always going to think that way. But if you could interject your thoughts and kind of say to yourself, like, stop in this moment and think about it, mm-hmm. and think clearly, you would no longer speak to yourself like that. But it's, we've got to reteach ourselves and reprogram ourselves to speak to ourselves in a different way, because if you've been doing it for a long time, it's now just become an innate response. Whereas, for example, if you were to look at yourself in the mirror, you will say, I do not like what I see. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's got to take some work, because on the flip side, that I don't believe that we just should be worthy of everything, like, or you deserve to have things because you think that you believe that, because that's some raw bullshit sometimes. The exact definition of having a goal is that you're not worthy of it yet until you've put in the work. You need to change to be a different person to win or to do that, because at the moment you don't have the skill set or the requirement or the work ethic to be able to be worthy of that thing. So it's a bit of both, where you've got to, one, believe, yes, but then two, you've got to work to be in that position. So there's got to be some kind of self-discovery and self-development put in place for you to talk to yourself better. It doesn't just come overnight. It's going to take being mindful, putting in practices, doing things that you know will make you better tomorrow in order to talk to yourself in a more positive light. But I definitely agree with the people that you surround yourself with, because that's whenever you raise the standards of what you're doing, or the people around you raise those standards, it's always going to have a positive impact on you.
Mm-hmm. When you speak about mindfulness, then one of the things that I love to do, and I don't even write them down anywhere, I in my head practice a lot of gratitude. Do you know what annoys me now about when everyone's like, practice gratitude? I think because, and this is going to come out wrong, I think on social media, what's happened now, when people do these like in life videos or healthy habits or this or that, people always like, practice gratitude. And they make it seem like this really kind of like, I don't know. They make it seem something like, it's just, I actually can't describe what I'm thinking in my head. You don't have to have this amazing journal and sit there and light candles and fuck me, just say out loud, do you know what? I'm really grateful for my husband today. I'm really grateful that I woke up and I was like healthy. I say them in my own head. I don't voice them. I don't share them. I don't put pressure on it. But eventually it will lead to improved self-talk, because you're focusing on the good things that you have in your life as opposed to what you don't have. But I just think sometimes social media is really glamorized just to say gratitudes, or that you need to order this journal. Like, I've done it before. I've got journals. I've tried to do it at 6 o'clock in the morning and I'm thinking, I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling anything. Don't light your incense. I'm not feeling it. In my head, a lot of the time now, when I'm on runs, every single run that I do, I have random gratitudes that pop up in my head. Like, I'm so grateful that I'm outside today. Even if it's raining, I'm like, I'm so grateful that it rains in this country. Like, imagine if it didn't rain. Like, I go through on journeys. My brain goes on journeys for just being grateful for these small things. So, yeah, I think just gratitude and doing it in your own way, whatever suits you. Like, you could write it in the notes on your phone. You could write it down 100%. I'm not saying that. Whatever you do, just have moments where you're refocusing on the things that you do have in your life in a positive way, and you can do things, and you're constantly not telling yourself you can't do this, you can't do that. Like, erase that a little bit from your vocabulary. If you're the kind of person who's like, oh, I can't do this, well, you can. You're just probably not in the mood, or you've not even tried yet. Yeah. You've not even tried. So you've said you can't do something, and if you keep failing, you're still doing it. You just got to give yourself more time.
I think when those things come up as well of negative self-talk, it's trying to think about what has set you off on that. What is the stimulus that has caused that response? So I'm trying to think of one that's potentially come up for me before. Maybe I've been working with a brand in the past and that partnership has now ended. And it was ended from the brand side. I'm just going to try and pick something out that is relevant. And my internal dialogue will be, I'm a piece of shit. I am terrible at what I do. There are people who are way better than me. And no wonder that this happened. Mm. And that stimulus and response. So the thing that we need to try and focus on between that is go, okay, this was the stimulus. And I now need to slow this process in between instead of just going to my innate response and applying it to overall. Because what you can then do if you do that is you don't come up with the negative self-talk. And in replace of the negative self-talk, you can go, okay, this is now a new opportunity. I have now new
doors,
paths, journeys, which I can go on. And this is what I'm going to do now or tomorrow to action this and turn it into something new.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the important thing, I think, with mindfulness is what's a stimulus? Why has it made me feel like this? And what will my response be? And how different would it be if I slowed it down instead of just going to my innate response?
Yeah.
Cool.
Love that. So that was how to talk to yourself.
Number three, do intentional work. Something that I've been thinking quite a lot about since I've been back is intentional work. And I was thinking quite a lot about this yesterday because I am guilty of it. And a lot of these things that I'm talking about now is things that I either need to do, practice, or have done and apply to me. So we all know the things that we need to do today which would better our chances of achieving our goals. We all know them. And we also all know something that we shouldn't be doing daily that pushes us further away from them as well. And this is the thing I was talking about with rules before, because however much we know the thing or rules we should be following, sometimes it's easy to ignore them because there is no one or nothing keeping us accountable or keeping us in place with them. And the thing for me is, and I sent this out to my broadcast list on Instagram yesterday, it was live one day like your idol is watching you.
Mm-hmm.
How different would your day then be?
That's so funny.
I was thinking about that.
Oh my God, I'd be really regimented.
How different would your day look? What decisions would you make differently? What would you stop putting off if you knew that they were watching you all day? Or they were in the office for the day just watching you do things?
I love that quote. Did I get that one tattooed on my
arm? That's my one, so you can stop stealing my quotes.
We're trying to find a quote that I can put my arm out.
You'd want to be the person that they see doing the big things, doing the work, setting the initiatives, not just ticking off the small things like tick boxes. Because what I tend to do is, I'm not intentional with my work. So what I'll do is, I will sit on my emails and even reply to live emails that come through rather than sit there and research topics and plan the podcast because it requires higher energy and more productivity. But emails, it's a monotonous task. I can hide behind my computer, I can do it. And it's easy to execute. Then what happens is I get towards the end of the day when I have less energy, I'm a lesser version of myself, I've now got to do the task that would push me forward more.
When you say the end of the day, though, by the way, when he says the end of the day, he is meaning 7, 8, 9 p.m. at night when I'm sat there thinking this is me and you time. And now this is annoying because you're working on something that you could have done in the day.
Yeah, which is stupid when you think about it.
Mm. You do. Do you know what? He's saying that you do that quite often. I need to do this. I'm thinking, you had all the time in the day.
This morning, I push back creativity tasks. So this morning I got up and edited the video that I needed to edit that I needed up today. I did that first.
That's honestly, for you do that a lot. And it makes me feel guilty when I'm just sat there at 6 o'clock waiting for Ben downstairs. Like, I don't know what to do myself because I don't have anything to do.
Yeah. The watching thing really works for me.
Do you know what's really mad when you just said that? The thought of your idol. I don't know if I've got idols, but like massive inspiration people. I've got two pivotal ones, I think. And one is my dad. my God, if I was sat there working with my dad, I'd be like, right, what can I, like, I'm going to get stuff done. The second is Nick Bear. And do you know what freaks me the fuck out?
He's going to be watching you run.
He's going to be watching me run, sleep deprived, crying, probably shitting myself. And I can't process. I can't process, like, living in a house with them all for a week. It scares the absolute... If they're up at 4 a.m, I'd be like, yeah, this is the norm. This is me. I'm always up at 4 a.m. to go for a 10-mile jog. Don't you? I'm put my shoes on. Like, I just feel that is an amazing way. I would like that tattooed on my arm. That is an amazing way to look at something, because it really changes your perception. Like, fuck me, I'm not going to be moping around. Not that I do anyway, but, oh, I'm going to be very, let's go for a run, guys. Yeah. Like, very positive.
Because otherwise, you just turn up and tick the boxes and you're just average. So I also sent this out.
Who's
to the
watching you, by the way?
I'll tell you in a sec. I also sent this out to the channel as well. I've been using it quite frequently on Instagram.
So a plug.
Yeah, so a plug. I tend to find that if you do what everyone else does, you will inevitably get the same as everyone else gets, which in this day and age isn't a lot, especially based on the average person. Common practices aren't always the best. They are average. Don't be scared to be a little different or a little weird.
What's that?
So send that out with it. My idol watching me would be. See, this is something I don't really think about that often. I think my idols have changed a lot over the past few years, and it's difficult for me to think of one that would be watching over me. I think Hormozy's a big one for me.
I was going to say straight away. Ben looks like him. Does anyone think Ben looks like Hormozy with that beard? I did.
It's just got a beard. It's like saying...
No.
It's like saying...
Kel, do you think he looks a little bit like Hormozy? No.
Not massively.
It's like,
I'm
saying...
I'm really seeing
it's like
it.
Saying, doesn't Cal look like Ronaldo because he's got a red cap on today? It's like, you picked one thing.
No, you're very dark featured.
the only thing with Hormozy is I'm not like on the same wavelength where he just loves of work 24/7, but he's definitely one of those people. If there's in a work environment, I think if it's like in a training environment, it would be,
imagine if it was Goggins.
Yeah, it'd be Goggins or something like that.
I'd dissolve into the floor. I'd literally just be like a puddle on the floor. How you would feel a certain type of way, I think, if he was watching over you.
Yeah, definitely. I have to think about that. Like, I didn't even think of my own idol watching.
Who's yours, Kyle? If you've got one.
You.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh,
if you had one, Cal, who would it be?
I don't know. Different walks, isn't it? If, like, photography, I've got like a million. It'd be like Steve McCurry. It would be, I don't know, can't remember. Loads and loads and loads of people. Nick Walker, loads of people.
If you had to pick one, though, this is where I struggled. Could you pick one just for overall life?
No, probably not for my entire life, because I don't know anyone who focuses on all the various different things I do, you know?
If it was someone to keep you accountable?
If it was just pure accountability, it'd be someone like my granddad, like someone I never met, someone who was just watching over me, and I'm like, oh, am I really going to sit on my couch and watch TikTok for 45 minutes when he was out killing Nazis when he was my age, you know?
Yeah. Does that make you feel a certain type of way, Cal?
Yeah. There's a commendation. My mum found like a military commendation for something he did when he was 23, and it genuinely made me like come to tears and realize that some of the stuff I complain about in my life is just... like he's shot in the shoulder walking through the streets, and it says like exhausted through lack of blood and crippled by the wounds that he sustained, his gallantry was an inspiration to all who had the privilege to see it.
Wow.
And I hear that and I get like chills.
It gives me chills.
Like fucking Sisu.
Literally. And I'm genuinely like stressed out that my Wi-Fi is not working. It's just insane.
Mate, things like that all really, I do really find those things good, because when I was having that bitch fit in America about not putting a post up, I think about things like that. And I'm like, I'm just being an absolute whiny bitch. Because what, and it all comes back to, and I think I said this on the previous podcast, is anyone going to die? No. So it's going to be okay.
Yeah, you were a little bit of a whiny bitch during that moment.
I can think of loads for you, Lucy. So don't even start.
I do have a lot, but do you know what happened on that day? I was really, you know, it's also
George,
really
she left me and went to the M&M store.
I did. I actually went to the M&M store. Not like M&M the rapper, as in M&M's chocolate. And I also went to get a Starbucks. I went and bought a new t-shirt. Because honestly, I said to Ben, I was like, I'm just gonna have to walk away from this situation because it's making me feel really stressed. I'm just gonna let you edit. I came back and the same thing had happened to the post, and I was like, we're just gonna go from scratch. Sometimes though, it's important to recognize when you need to walk away from a situation. I'm quite good with that. If I'm really moody or angry, or I don't get as bad anxiety anymore, but if it was, I'd just walk away from the situation. I'll be like, I'll be back soon. I'm just gonna take a time out because I'm feeling really negative. I don't want my negativity to rub off on you. And I go and put myself in a corner and I come back when I'm more positive. I just let you all know that. I do that often. Not often, but sometimes. I'm done. Sorry. I was on a spiel.
Go on then, next point.
Point number four. Responsibility.
Ooh.
Now, the question that I would ask all you people listening, what does it mean to take responsibility for your actions? I think responsibility and accountability are very, very much related. Now, taking responsibility for your actions requires the realization that you play a part in every situation or experience, and therefore you have some degree of responsibility over the outcomes or consequences. Now, the reason I refer to it as accountability, because I do think they go hand in hand. When you're accountable to something, you're also responsible for it. And it means that your first reaction when you make a mistake or there's like a conflict that arises isn't to blame others, make excuses, twist the facts, or flat out lie. And it's a really hard thing to do when you're responsible for something and it's gone wrong. The best thing you can do, and I'm going to give essentially tips on taking responsibility for your own actions, is you have to swiftly, in your own mind, acknowledge that there's a problem, identify your role in it. So what role did you play? And implement an action plan to minimize or eliminate the chance of it happening again. Now, this actually happened to me yesterday. I can't share what the three of us will be doing this year, but I double booked. And I was like, fuck. Bear in mind, I was on a run yesterday. So when we were all meshing yesterday in this, I can't share what this is yet, guys. You'll know by the end of the year. I was running and I was like, fuck, fuck, fuck. Every step I was taking, because I was like, I fucked up so bad. Essentially, I've confirmed two things, that conflict, and they're both so important, aren't they? Mm. Both the things are so important. And essentially, I kind of felt, I felt like I was popping off, being like, this isn't my problem, when actually I am the sole problem of this scenario, because I double booked and I haven't been keeping in comms with other things that have been going on. And to resolve this, I'm basically going to have to fly across the world within like a day to resolve this thing that's happened. But it took me a bit of time, I think, to realize that it was my fault, that I hadn't communicated dates essentially properly. And it's really, really hard to acknowledge when you've really done some, not something like wrong, and this is like a major, because this is just an example that literally happened yesterday. But rather than like lashing out or blaming other people, you've got to just take responsibility and recognize the role that you played in that, for what's currently going on and what's occurring. And it's just very, very hard to do, but you can't blame other people when you're the one who's at fault and you can't make excuses. The thing you can do is find a solution to the problem. Semi now have a solution to the problem. But I'm in a really jet lag situation of basically what it will be when it happens. And that's fine. It's just one of those things. Sometimes you've just got to take it and be like, hey, there's a solution. This is what we can do. And then a lot of the time you'll realize, whether it is in a work environment, a training environment, a gym environment, if you speak to other people and communicate how you're feeling, a lot of them, you're like, oh my God, I've really messed up here. Can you help me? They are not going to be mean to you or bash you down or say things. They were probably like, do you know what? Fair play that you've owned up to that. Let's see what we can do to sort it and minimize that problem. So that is taking accountability for your actions. And I thought that's why I wanted to talk about that one today, because I think it's really good to use real life examples. But yeah, definitely the things of, you can't blame other people. You have to be very swift in acknowledging when you yourself have to take responsibility for something that has gone wrong. And also with this responsibility one, I didn't go down the route of, oh, you have these five work tasks, Like, let's boost productivity. Let's boost responsibility. No, you have five work tasks. They're your five work tasks. I'm talking about when you mess up and you've got to be accountable and how to own something and take responsibility. Because, like, a lot of the time it's positive, but sometimes it can be negative.
Yeah, it stings. Definitely stings, I think.
Stings.
You're swift with solutions, but you do blame other people.
Oh, my God. I get frantic. I think of the worst case scenario.
Your defense mechanism straight away is like, it's not my fault.
Mm.
And then once you come down off the panic,
then registers.
But we all do it because I think it's a natural ego defending mechanism. But I was terrible when I was younger for it.
Mm.
If, like, something, my top wasn't ironed properly, or it was screwed up, it was mum's fault because she left it on my bed, but then I pushed it off the bed and left it for 3 days. If my account had zero cash in, it was Netflix's fault because they took the subscription out, even though it was my responsibility to cancel it. You know, little things where I'd get in frenzies and blame other people for it. The one thing that really helped me recognize this and for it to register a while ago was a book called The Times 10 Rule. And the Time 10 rule says, thinking and the attitude of a successful person is that things don't happen to you, they happen because of you and the actions you take. Successful people take responsibility for everything that happens in their lives, good or bad. If you're willing to take credit when you succeed, you have to take responsibility for the problems too. Taking responsibility enables you to take the big actions that create big success. And I think that's so true.
Mm-hmm.
So true. People are so quick to take the accolades and the wins and the trophies when they've done the things, but they are so defensive when it comes to taking responsibility for the issues and the problems and then coming up with a solution. And it's that winners versus victims mentality. And again, we all fall into it, but it is so easy to blame other people for things. But although it in the short term satisfies you because you go, it was my fault, it is so counterintuitive in the long run because you give responsibility to other people, which means you are always almost helpless because you have no action to take next in order to solve that problem. You've given that away to someone else. Your fate now rests with someone else. Whereas although it stings to take that responsibility at first, you now have control of the situation and you can dictate what happens next.
What's really interesting, you talking about that, the book that I'm reading at the moment, The Do the Hard Things, which I'm still reading, by the way, guys, fuck me, I've been very slow recently. Because I was reading rom-coms. I read 3 rom-coms when I was away. Anyway, point aside. One of the best things to be more responsible is to create that mental toughness. And there was a quote from the book, and I noted it down from this morning. When we don't have control, we lose the capacity to cope. It's when we have a choice that toughness is trained. And what this is basically saying is we need to develop, to train mental toughness, you have to develop and maintain a sense of control. Now, when you have a sense of control over a situation and you have autonomy, it helps you be more responsible in that situation because it's yours. You are in control of that situation. So when you understand the control, when control gets taken away from us, we sometimes lose capacity to even cope. So I felt yesterday, I was like, oh my God, I'm not in control. Like, I have no idea. Reel it in. It's your responsibility. Get out of that headspace. Whatever's going on, you're in control of the situation. Lay out all the points. Communicate with everybody about it. This is where you've gone wrong. This is where you've gone right. This is what we can do. And having that level of control over the situation that you're responsible for, your situation could be a work task, for example. It could be in the office. It could be whatever. You're responsible for it. And having not willing to lose that sense of control is really, really important.
Yeah.
And just being very aware that it's your thing and you need to have a bit more of a level head.
Mm. It's really, really easy to spot victim mentality as well.
Mm.
Because that type of person will think bad things happen to them regularly. Oh, it's always me. Always happens to me. You know, that type of person. Or someone will always think something else is to blame. Mm. And if you're always protecting yourself, then you're never going to be able to move forward. That's something to think about. Or are you just trying to protect yourself? Because it's usually a net negative. So try not to blame others. although something isn't your fault, it is always your responsibility. And sometimes that's difficult, is to take that fault, blame away from things and just take ownership for it. Again, the book that I'm reading at the moment called Clear Thinking, it gave an example of this from a workspace. And it was a guy who was responding to an email from one of his work colleagues because basically he was late to report something back or finish a report that was really important for the project. And this guy had replied, basically giving all the reasons why it was late and why he wasn't to blame and things that were out of his control and the bus that he was catching didn't turn up and then it broke down. And this guy's response just emailed back to him and said, "I don't care. It's your responsibility to our team and our mission to get your shit done. If you can't own that, learn from it and figure it out for next time. I don't want to work with you. P.S. Don't blame the bus for being late. Buy a car." That was his work response email.
Oh, my God. It is true, then. You know, a lot of the time, you list off things when you've done things wrong. You're like, oh, this, this, and this. I actually did it the other day, and I felt quite bold for doing this. I was, we got back from Florida on the Tuesday morning at 6 o'clock, and I had a physio appointment at 2:15. First time seeing this guy, this specialist. I always make a good impression. I always get everywhere early. I was so tired. I slept till like 2 o'clock, and I thought, I was like, oh, it's fine. I woke up, take 20 minutes to get there. And instead of saying to this guy, because I had him on WhatsApp, being like, oh, this happened, there was a crash, I went the wrong way. I just said, I'm so sorry, I've only just set off and I'm going to be late. Like, I could have come up with loads of excuses why I was late. There was a crash, there was this, there was that, there was traffic lights, oh, I went the wrong way. I was like, I'm so sorry, I've been asleep and I've just woke up and I'm on my way. And I felt really kind of like, yeah, well done, me. Because that's a really awful thing to do. I'm usually an hour early, by the way, guys. This is why it was so frantic to me. And I just said, I was like, I'm really sorry. I just woke up. I'm going to be 10 minutes late. Yeah. And he was like, no worries at all. Thanks for letting me know. And I thought, thanks.
Lies always catch up as well, don't they? That's why it's better to be an actor rather than be acted upon.
Do you feel like as well, just out of interest, Lucy, if you'd have lied and said like, oh, there's a breakdown and that this happened, part of you be thinking, oh, is he going to buy this? Is he going to buy? As opposed to like,
part of me was thinking,
this is the truth. Yeah. I'm late. It is what it is.
Part of me is thinking, well, no, he's now going to Google crashes in the air. Do you know what I mean? Like my head would go into that. And I used to do white lies like that. If I was late for something or something happened, I'd used to try and make up excuses. Then I would be in turmoil thinking, oh my God, they're going to realize this isn't true. They're going to Google it. It's just easy to be like, I'm late. Yeah. Like this happened. Like I'm sorry. I'm on my way.
I don't know if you clocked it this morning. I was like 15, 20 minutes late for work. And in the back of my mind, I was like, are they going to believe that I'm actually in traffic? So I then took a picture of the traffic.
I always do that.
I don't know why.
I think that made me laugh. I don't think those kind of things appease the person that you send them to. They kind of put your own mind at ease.
Yeah,
just like,
I think it is.
You're trying to convince yourself.
I'm not lying, honestly.
Yeah. That's what I mean. You're trying to convince your own head. But even with things like Gary Vee has a rule where everything is his fault. And I think that can be taken too far to a certain extent.
Yeah, his is sometimes.
Because he will have things like the car crash was his fault. Everything is always your fault because it can always be avoided.
His are too extreme. Because I think he's used the example for like, if you get cancer, it's your fault. It's like, fuck me, like, come on. Let's just not do that.
If you wanted to, you could always map everything back to your fault. But it's like, how far back in terms of the action and decisions made that then unfold to the next consequence do you go back to in order for something to be your fault? There's got to be some kind of cutoff to it.
Yeah, I agree. Point number five.
The other thing I was thinking on that is like, it's so hard to change that, but the ability to change your mind is, I think, one of the smartest things that you can do.
Absolutely.
Not the weakest. Okay, last one.
We've moved on. What? I was going to say, we also had that with the kittens.
Yes.
We fucking shit them up on that first night like you would not believe. Would you not believe? And we would, and then we couldn't, that was, we couldn't take responsibility. Yeah. It's not our fault, they're really shy.
Change your mind.
I've never seen Munch jump like that before.
Change your mind. Change your mind. And how difficult is it? I put this up yesterday. To learn from people you don't like.
Why would you want to learn from people?
Think of someone in the back of your mind you really dislike. Yeah? Don't have to say it.
Wasn't going to say
yeah.
it.
But do you think there's things that you could learn from them?
Oh my God, for sure. We all know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. That, but it's really easy to just disregard things from people or learn things from people who we dislike.
Mm.
Really difficult.
Do we all know who I'm thinking about?
I mean, yeah. Should we say it on three?
No, no. But isn't that interesting? We're all very in tune.
Yeah. Okay, final one. And this one I've spoken about before. It's don't trade a treasure for a toad.
I didn't understand the quote, so I just looked at it.
Let me explain. Because I've wrote
something, I didn't make a single I've wrote something
down
on
my notes. It's trading what you have now for what you think you want in the future. I.e. swapping the chill weekends with family for work in order to secure the bigger house. Or trading the round of golf with friends for the extra meeting in order to upgrade to a new car. So it's all these things that you're setting out as goals because you believe that they're going to make you happier in said amount of years. But sometimes we just end up swapping the things we're already doing that making us happy for the things that you just create more headaches from and less time from. Mm-hmm. So yes, don't trade the treasure for the toad. Make life work, don't work to live. So it's that thing. I've caught myself in this so many times. I think lots of people do. I think it's very easy for people who have like been through that problem or been lucky enough to have that problem to say, oh yeah, just don't do it. Like enjoy the things that you've got now. It's an easy thing to say, but it kind of comes back to that Mexican fisherman story again of someone trying to sell him the bigger dream and then him thinking about all the sacrifice that I have to make to get it. And then he'll just be back to the same position anyway of retiring and just locally fishing, doing the things that are simple and make him happy, which is why I am a big fan of minimalism, because if you can embrace minimalism, it can really make you happy without needing those external things to be happy.
Yeah, completely. And do you know what? Catching yourself in those moments is really, if you learn to catch yourselves in those moments of feeling that you're not enough, you're not good enough, you're not this far ahead, you're not here, because everyone gets it. I don't think no matter what stage your career, you're right, you could be a billionaire, you could be a non-billionaire. I don't know what the reference that is. And you catch yourselves in these moments of, God, I should be here, I'm not doing enough, I feel worthless. I'm very good at catching myself. When those moments come in my head, I'm thinking, whoa, have gratitude. Like, whoa, we're having a good day. Life is good. There's nothing. Go outside and do a walk. Love a walk. And my head then goes off into this whole other tangent. And I used to be awful at it. I used to then go on social media and compare to my peers and other businesswomen and other fitness people and marathon runners. And I used to just be really quite negative in self-comparison for what people had that I didn't have. And then you look back and you think, well, but what are the things that actually make me really happy in life? Like the happy list that we have and things that make us feel happy. And my therapist gave me an amazing tool that you just have a photo album on your phone. Mine's called the Happy Hormone. And it's got all the pictures of things that I love. So I've got pictures of the kittens in there now. I've got pictures of my family. I've got pictures of when I've been on like random walks or like random really funny pictures of me and you and just things that make me smile. And yeah, that's a really important one to be able to catch yourself in it and have ways to cope.
I think one question just to think about now is, can you be more with less? I know actually someone, not in my immediate circle, but I know someone who a lot of time wants to make more money or have more things just for the sake of wanting more money or more things, not because that would lead to anything better or not because the endeavor of achieving it would create or make better moments for them. And what I mean by that is you might say, well, I might say, I want that Lamborghini. It's always been a thing for me. I'm a big car person. Like I really enjoy driving my car. I enjoy going off sometimes in the nighttime and driving it on my own, being on my own, listening to the car. I'm into F1. I enjoy cars. So that's a little bit of a hobby for me. Whereas, for example, someone might just want a car because they want the status and they want to pull up at the club or past the girls or wherever it might be or in front of friends. Most of the time, you're not trying to impress all the girls or they're trying to impress the boys. So there's differences of why you might want to achieve something. If the reason you just want to achieve it is for someone else and not for yourself, I think that's a big indicator that you want more for not good purposes, if that makes sense. And I kind of got stuck in this trap a while ago. I thought I would always need to be cycling through this thing of always needing to work more to live more. Especially when I first started the business, when I was just doing hours after hours after hours, I thought I just needed to work harder to get more. And that was the only thing that was in my head. And it became draining and soul destroying. It took up all my time. It stopped me doing all the things that I loved doing. I wasn't seeing friends. I wasn't seeing family. I wasn't making any time for anything else but the work that I was doing, just so I could, in the future, buy more things. And then it's just like, is this going to make me feel any better? And how long do I continue that for? I can go on videos on my phone during that period when I was away from work, where I'm laughing and happy and stuff like that with friends and family. So it just goes to show, like, the only thing that was making me miserable was just being stuck in an office for 12, 14 hours a day. Which, don't get me wrong, when you set up a business, there's things you have to do. But I think it's important to think about most probably the why. Your why is the biggest thing. Ask yourself, why do you need that thing, or why are you going after that thing? Is it really going to make you happier, or is it going to make other people around you think that you're happier?
Well, that's leaving you on a brain.
Because there's still things dump. I think I need to buy now and go, oh, that will, that when I get that, that's it. That's the thing.
Yeah, I don't have anything like that.
I sometimes get it with completing things like the gym. Oh, but you got that one more piece of gym kit. Because
yeah,
I love gym kit. I mean, I love gym, so I love gym.
I love gym. That was just like, I love gym.
That's it. I love gym. That's
I love
it.
Gym.
End of podcast. Bye, guys.
I love gym. That was so, you missed out a word. I love the gym.
No, I love it.
I love it that much.
I don't love the gym. I love gym.
You do that though. Ben's always like, oh, we could do this. We could move this around. We could have this here. We could have a mirror here. And I'm thinking, I just like gym as it is. Like, I don't need to change gym.
I love J-I-M.
We need to stop now. You've completely. We are going to end the podcast there, actually, because I love gym. Full stop is how we end today's podcast. But I hope you loved it. We hope you took a lot away from today and the 5 points that we did give you to live a happier, healthier, more fulfilled life. As always, keep subscribing on YouTube, on Spotify, leaving reviews. It helps the podcast more than you know. We can't articulate actually how much it does help the podcast when you guys share and leave reviews, and it means we can get amazing guests on and we can keep podcasting for you guys. So stay tuned and we'll catch you soon.
Bye, guys.